I think when it comes to like pro sports teams, we get used to sometimes they have a challenging road trip, right? Like I'm thinking back, the Atlanta Braves just finished a three-city West Coast trip where they were gone for a week and a half. Sonny, you guys haven't played in Plainsman Park since April 26th. Does everybody even remember where things are in Plainsman Park? Or is this just something where it's going to be like it's just nice to get home and it's like riding a bicycle?
Yeah. No, it's feel like we were there forever ago. But it's nice to be back. That was a long stint.
There you go. What was the favorite thing you ate on the road trip? Like that's always the best part of traveling, especially like if I'm traveling for work and there's a per diem. Like the favorite thing you ate in the road trip?
Probably Two Brothers at Mississippi State. It's a barbecue restaurant.
Barbecue in Mississippi. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, we probably ate barbecue 15 times because we were in Texas.
That makes sense.
Yeah, it was solid. But it was like, all that was counting down was not how good it was how many days till we go home.
There you go. Yeah, just a long road trip there. Welcome to the Barn Baseball Show. Lindsey Crosby, Senator Shara. That long road trip is why you guys haven't seen as many episodes recently. Obviously, Sonny's traveling with the team. Brad's on the road to call these games. So it's been a little bit, you know, hit and miss there. But we are hopefully back. And the way things are looking, it feels like we would be back pretty much until the team goes to Omaha, simply because this Auburn baseball team is a number four in the country and has an RPI that is one of, if not the best in the country. Before we get into the weekend, before we get into Mississippi State and all of that, number two RPI after the toughest strength of schedule in the entire country. That feels like it's not easy to do, Sonny. And like, I feel like this team has been challenged maybe more than any other Auburn roster in recent history, maybe even more than your roster, simply because of like the schedule that they've been given, both obviously the conference schedule. They've missed a lot of the bad teams at the bottom, but also the non-conference schedule was top 15 in the country for strength of schedule.
Yeah. I mean, I think I saw a tweet from Carter Bird the other day. We played seven of the eight top eight teams because we would have played eight out of eight if we played ourselves. So,
which you technically have done a lot of that too, just it doesn't count in the standings. Yeah.
Seven of the eight top eight. And then like we played Oklahoma, Kentucky, who were like 10 and 11. And then obviously we played Missouri. That was our one bottom tier team. But like this schedule, Coach Thompson set this thing up with ideas of having strength of schedule and RPI. And number one strength schedule. And if it wasn't for UCLA, we'd probably be number one in RPI. But you're not going to be ahead of a team that's lost five games this year. Like, it's just not realistic.
Yeah. To your point on the SEC schedule and what we've played, of the top eight teams in the conference, like you said, seven of them are your opponents. And then the eighth one was obviously us. Mm-hmm. And then of the bottom 16, Auburn's only played three of them. And it's number 11, number 12, Oklahoma, Kentucky. And the number 16 Missouri, who is 6-21 in conference play entering this weekend. So that kind of tells you it's the most frustrating year to miss both Vanderbilt and LSU, both those teams. I mean, LSU's 9-18 in conference, Vandy's 11-16. How much attention are you guys paying to the teams that you're not playing in the season? Does the fact that they're so bad even cross your mind? Do you guys have chances to like watch and figure out what's up? Or is it just like you see it in the standings one day, you're like, oh, that sucks. Anyway, on to Georgia.
Well, I definitely took your notice to it. Be like, man, those are historically teams that don't do this. Like, man, missed their playoffs for the first time and who knows, like what, 16 years or whatever. Yeah. LSU, about the same, whatever their streak is. And you know, with Vitello leaving Tennessee, the fact that they're still, what are they? Are they 13-12 or 13-14?
13-14. 13-14. They're in the back half of that little mass right there in the middle of the conference. Yeah.
They're going to make a regional. You know, they're at 13 wins. And it's just, you know, it's weird to see the difference of who was dominating for so long and now being in it now. It's just kind of different for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, well, one of the teams that's in that top eight that you guys faced was Missouri over the weekend. You know, last weekend you lost game one 10-3, and then coming back 5-4 win in game two, and then a run rule victory in game three. Without getting too deep into all the details of the series, I feel like the trend, the number one trend for Auburn baseball this season, and one that makes it really enjoyable, is getting that run rule victory in game three. And I feel like it always comes back to just making this, tearing up their bullpen, making them burn so many arms in games one and two that by game three, they're just running on fumes. How much of that is an intentional strategy in games one or two, and how much of that is just the side effect of this offense and the way that they approach their at-bats?
It's really the pitching, right? Like there's not many teams in the country that have three sub 3.5 ERA starters.
True.
And almost sub three ERA starters that can go in the seventh inning. So, you know, we're not having to use our depth. We have the depth. We're not having to use it. But like if we knock out one of their starters early, it's kind of like, oh, you're done. A&M, we saw their best guy on maybe game two. Their best two relievers or whatever it was, you know. Oh, no, did we lose game three to A&M?
Oh, I've got the schedule here.
Yeah, we won the doubleheader and lost
4-3. Yeah,
they put their closer in for like three innings, and that was and we still almost came back. We had bases loaded, one out, and Brandon McCray into a double play. We were down one. You know, if that doesn't happen, it could have been a whole different series. But like it just, you know, we'll try to get to your best guy, and after we see your best guy, it's kind of over at that point. We take control, where the other teams don't have to see our Hetzler twice in a weekend. You know, you get Jackson Sanders for four innings, and sorry, like it's just kind of it's tough.
Yeah, it feels like that's definitely, you know, one of the advantages there is the pitching. And I guess I maybe don't think about how across the conference, so many game threes are high scoring outside of what our pitching does. And so I kind of naturally attribute it to, and Auburn's offense does a good job of that, of getting starters out of the game early, of getting to a pen. But I guess I don't think about the fact that not everybody's getting the other end of a blowout, which is, you've got to keep their offense off the board to get that 10-run margin there.
Like, I want to say A&M and Mississippi State threw guys who had, like, an inning on the year because they had to. That's especially game three against Mississippi State. They were running dudes out. Gabe was like, this guy's got 0.1 inning this year.
Yeah. They brought Bauer back for the second time in the series. Yeah, and it was one of those, they were just desperate for anybody who could do something, and he, I mean, he gave up – he didn't make a full inning. He gave up three runs, and
– yeah.
Got two outs, so kind of the same situation of just like I just like it was also funny. He faced five batters. He threw 19 pitches. Like he was not getting very deep into the at bats, and Auburn was teeing off on these guys. But that's the way this Auburn offense runs. And to your point, we use Petrovic and Hetzler, and that's it to get through the seven innings. And great in seven innings.
Yeah,
but yeah,
like you see JSU game. You know, if one, two guys ain't rolling, then we're not going to roll. That's just hitting's contagious. So,
yep.
Just how it is. And we've been fortunate enough to get those run rule victories at least once a weekend, which is crazy.
Yeah. How, Ethan Bingaman has been so great this year. And he's won multiple Player of the Week awards and things like that. Seeing him go into Mississippi State, he's like 5-for-12. He hits a homer. He's driving in guys, stole a bag and everything. I know that I talk all the time. I talked earlier this year with you about how like you can't expect the three freshmen to do like to have another three freshman group, but having a guy like Bingaman coming in and not breaking into the lineup until partway through the season, but playing your old position to first base, covering some outfield as well, DH-ing a little bit. His emergence, what has that done for the lineup and just the offense in general?
Yeah. I mean, it's not even just his bat, really. It's his he didn't play first base until a week before the season. So it's kind of like – but he's an athlete, so he's a middle infield guy, so you knew he was going to be able to handle it. But the stuff he's done over there has just been next level to obviously the bat. You know, the numbers tell itself, but he'll never get the credit he deserves for that defense. That's for sure.
Yeah. And it was, it's something like we've won six consecutive series now, if I have that stat right. And mm-hmm. I believe he's leading the team with like a 394 average during that stretch. It really feels like, and I think we've talked earlier in the year about how there was still a couple pieces that had to maybe figure mm-hmm. out. He's definitely one of them. And I feel like, to your point, because he's an athlete, you can put him at different places, but he's now hit the point where you can't take him out of the lineup. He's mm-hmm. played his way into a start in just about every single game. And so now I think about, like, okay, you got it. Like maybe DH is a role. I saw we rotated guys through in Mississippi State, you know, didn't have one specific guy. Is that approach of just, hey, we're going to play matchups here with who's going to be our DH for each individual game? Is that sustainable, or is that something where in this last series of the year against Georgia, we really need somebody to step up and say, I'm going to be the guy offensively at DH mm-hmm. going for the postseason?
Yeah, I mean, definitely at this point, you don't want to have that rotating ball. You definitely want to have your righty guy and your lefty guy, or mm-hmm. a guy that can hit both. And not having that right now is kind of tough. But the ability to have, you know, four or five guys that can go in there, that also is hard for a pitching staff, an opposing pitching staff, to be like, you know, hey, I'm going to bring a lefty in. Well, hey, we're going to bring a righty up.
Yeah, you make a change, we're going to make a change, and you're just going to have to live with it. Yeah, yes, having those guys. I think that is the advantage of not having a locked in full-time DH is you can play the matchups a little bit more, and, mm-hmm. and that definitely works out. All right, real quick, when we come back, I want to talk about this upcoming Georgia series, because I think some college baseball fans maybe don't quite understand what could look different with a Georgia team that's already clinched the SEC, and how it's going to kind of look a lot similar, but maybe just a little shorter leashes. We'll break all of that down next right here on the Barn Baseball Show. Welcome back to the Barn Baseball Show. Lindsey Crosby decided to share reuniting to kind of get back at it before this final series of the year. Georgia has already won the SEC. And I think people when they heard that, hey, they're 21-6 in conference, maybe a 4.5-game lead on everybody else. Like, this is done. There's no way that anybody can beat them. But it's not like either Major League Baseball, it's not like NFL and things like that, where teams are resting starters and things like that. I fully expect, and correct me if I'm wrong here, I fully expect to see pretty much a normal Georgia lineup this weekend. They may, like the starters, may not go as deep in the games, and there is a TBD in game 3. But I still feel like you're going to get the Georgia team that has the best offense in the SEC. You're going to get a majority of the same pitching staff. They may not ride the closer for 3 innings. They may not ask their starter to go 5 or 6 innings. They may ask him to go 2 or 3 and then move mm-hmm. to the pen.
Yeah. You know, what I hope is they come in here and they're kind of packed in already.
Mentally,
that's what I hope, right?
Yeah.
But that's just not going to happen. But I do think kind of what you're saying is, hey, you know, if the starters, I bet we would see an 80-pitch max. This is just from
speculation,
like an 80-pitch max, unless the guy's absolutely dealing. You know, they're not going to push guys. I bet they might throw guys they haven't thrown to see if they can be used. They might pinch hit guys who – need to
don't
see if they can
get to,
they need to see. I bet they're going to try to see things this weekend.
Yeah.
And I hope that they're like, oh, you know, we won the SEC, screw y'all. It's like, thank you.
One of the big things that I'm going to be watching for to figure out the mindset of this Georgia mm-hmm. team is how much Daniel Jackson plays behind the plate. He leads the team in average, home runs, RBI, leads the league in a couple different categories. Mm-hmm. And that's one of those positions, unlike first base or you know, left field or whatever, where you might actually be inclined to rest a guy and just not put him out there because of the constant risk of workload and injury to a catcher. So I think that's going to be a big tell, at least for me, on how aggressive Georgia's being about winning this series. And what is these two teams are schools are rivals. I don't think baseball wise, we have a ton of strong feelings about Georgia like we do, you know, a Mississippi State or an LSU mm-hmm. or Alabama or something. But I do think that you can tell a lot by that. How much how much preparation, and like, you guys have been in scenarios before where you get to that final week of the season, and I think your season specifically, and you had already pretty much put a bow on everything you had to put a bow on. The team you were playing that year, I'm trying to remember if it was like Kentucky, it was somebody towards the bottom of the SEC.
Yeah, Kentucky.
Kentucky.
Well, they I think they were kind of like the Oklahoma. They were like 12 and 13. Like, they had 12 wins, and they needed a couple more wins.
So they were actually pushing. I was trying to think about like how much preparation do they put into you guys if there's not much to play for? But I guess in your season, they mm-hmm. did have something to play for. I do wonder how much Georgia drills in on this Auburn team in the matchup, knowing that there's nothing's going to change for them. They can get swept. Yeah. They can sweep. Nothing changes for them.
Well, I think we knew we had a chance to host a Super.
Yeah.
If we would have swept Kentucky.
And you did.
But we lost to them three out of four times.
Gosh.
I know. We lost to them three out of four times. And we were also one game short at the SEC that year because the Alabama game that rained out.
That's right.
So we ended 16 and 13, but we went in there 15 and 10 or 15 and 11. And we left there 16 and 13. And that was not ideal. But we still ended up hosting. You know, it all worked out.
Yeah. The infamous, we're going to finish this series on Monday because of the rain. On Sunday night. I remember that.
Yeah.
Because credit to the program, they just threw the gates open. They're like, anybody can come who wants to, because it was like 3 o'clock in the afternoon or something. Mm-hmm. Anybody can come who wants to. Let's get the ballpark filled up.
Yeah, it was so weird.
That we were winning like seven or something. Like it was not close.
It was basically over, I think. And it was like the eighth inning or the seventh inning, whatever it was.
It was pretty late in the game. Yeah, it was pretty late. What I do like about this weekend, though, and this is more about the fan experience and everything here, but Auburn is still, I mean, this series has all the pomp and circumstance of a series. Lot going on. Senior day tonight, 6:30 p.m. A couple of our guys are getting honored. Abe Chancellor, Logan Gregorio, Todd Clay, Lucas Steele. And you, congratulations on getting your degree from Auburn. Mm-hmm. I know on Saturday there's going to be an on-field ceremony where they actually – I guess they're going to give you your degree or something on Saturday on the field.
Yeah.
But senior day today, so congratulations to you. It's kind of a great achievement. So make sure you're at the ballpark early all 3 days, because Friday, Josh Donaldson going on the Wall of Fame.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if before now you had a chance to hear him talk or speak with him or anything, but if you have, like, what's some of what he's imparted to you guys, either your season, this season, whatever, about Auburn and what it means?
Yeah, I actually haven't met Josh, so.
Okay.
I'll meet him, I guess.
Today.
Yeah, probably. Today. And I'll be out to the golf tomorrow for him, the golf event in the morning. So hopefully I can talk to him a little bit.
Maybe we have to bring back the study to share a golf Instagram account.
Right.
But it's going to be fun. The senior trading cards on Saturday, the orange rally towels today. Plainsman Plaza is back this weekend. I do want to get your thoughts on this. I've had a lot of people asking me about the SEC tournament coming up next week. It's always kind of a frustrating event to cover because there's so much rain and so games get pushed back.
Seriously.
But it feels like Auburn's never really done that well in the SEC tournament, at least in the last couple seasons.
Yeah.
Is that, do you think a side product of the fact that it doesn't really change things for Auburn as far as seeding in the tournament and all of that? Or is it more just kind of a coincidence of we just happen to have an off day pretty early in the tournament on a midweek and we just end up not advancing out of there?
Yeah. You know, credit to the teams like Vanderbilt and Tennessee who were ranked one and come in and just dominate the tournament year after year.
Yeah.
Like, because those guys have nothing to gain, really, other than get another ring. Like, Georgia's already won a ring this year. They got the regular season ring.
Yeah.
And so they can go in the SEC tournament and win a second ring, a champion tournament champion ring. And it's like, you know. There's teams that are fighting for that.
Do players care about a regular season ring, though? Like, is that a big deal to a lot of guys?
Like, I got a Samford ring somewhere up here.
Okay, so like you have it, you display
like,
it. Okay.
Yeah, like this is the tournament ring.
Oh, nice.
And then I also have I lost it, but like it says Starkville Regional on here. But I have a regular season championship ring that was just kind of like a.
Okay, all right.
You know, so like we didn't go to a regional. It was just like
It's like we got this ring and we're done. So yeah. Okay, cool. Yeah, all right.
I was exactly. Like, you know, because we went in there, and when you're in the mid-major, you have to win your conference tournament, or you're not getting.
Yeah,
unless the regular season like
doesn't really matter, other than seeding for the conference tournament. Yes. Yeah,
like unless you do something like JSU's done this year, they're no matter what, they're in. Period. But they're also in a stronger conference. They're in a Conference USA, and so they just kind of it stunk going in there as the one seed. Yeah. I think the one seed has actually not won that tournament, and the SoCon tournament in a long time.
Yeah, I mean they're 28th in RPI. I mean they're people think that they're you know just like a mid-major pushover. They're pretty good.
No, we do not want them in this region. I will tell you that.
Listen, quad one games, they are 7-7 in quad one games.
Wow. And we're something like that, right?
Do what?
We're something like, are we 500 in quad one?
We are 13-13. So more tests, but they have the same record as far as winning percentage in quad one that we do.
Yeah.
You know?
And I think like, Alabama, they barely lost Alabama twice, or they beat them once. Something around like that.
Stuff like that, yeah. But like, there's SEC teams that have worse winning percentages in quad one. Like Old Miss is 10-15 in quad one.
Yeah.
Texas A&M is barely over 500. Alabama's 12-11 in quad one. Florida State's 8-10 in quad one, right? Like, you know, so shout out to Jacksonville State there for that tough matchup on Tuesday.
Yeah, seriously.
Yeah. Just kind of feels like it's like, oh my goodness, let's be done with this now. Let's be done with Jacksonville State now. It's never really come up at Auburn. I don't know if you dealt with this a little bit at Samford, but there's a lot of conversation right now about teams canceling late season midweeks for RPI reasons. And they always make up some annoying, frustrating excuse, but we all know it's for RPI reasons.
Yeah.
Have you been on the other side of that while you were at Samford, or kind of what's your thoughts on that whole practice?
You know, I don't think RPI was that big of a deal until like
just maybe. Years ago.
Yeah, just a few years ago. Like, we never got canceled on, but Kentucky canceling their game against Northern Kentucky, the reasoning they canceled it and they sent out like a statement after. Like, our players are tired. They just played they have a Thursday, Friday, Saturday series coming up and they need some rest. And it's like, okay, whatever.
Yeah.
You have a turf field. Like, we drove 2 hours to go play JSU. I know JSU is a great, like, they were a good team this year.
Yeah.
But say we were driving to go play Troy, and Troy's not as good of a team this year. Then RPI is not as good. We still would have played. I don't think Coach Thompson has it in him to. And the NCAA sent that thing out as well.
They sent a letter out to all the head coaches saying like they're going to start paying attention to when you cancel a game, without an obvious weather reason, and it just looks like it's you ducking RPI. Like the difference in Kentucky and Northern Kentucky, 246 spots in RPI was the difference at the time. Kentucky was 30, Northern Kentucky was 276. Yeah. Or you've got Virginia Tech canceling the back half of a home-and-home with Marshall. They're supposed to go to Marshall. 39 RPI versus 175. And it's like, okay, yeah. Coincidence that you're canceling that.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, and I don't think RPI should play that big of a role then. If that's, you know, they shouldn't put that much of an emphasis on it.
I caught a lot of flack on social media when I said, just schedule better games. Like, stop putting the bad RPI game in early May. If you're going to play a bad RPI midweek, put it in like March.
Yes,
like, stop scheduling that in early, like in May, because that's when you see things get canceled. Yeah. Just move it earlier in the year.
Yeah. Play two double midweeks then. Play two Tuesday, Wednesday midweeks early in the season and get it over with.
We have a couple weeks where we've done that, where we've played a midweek on Tuesday and Wednesday, and then a series opener on Friday. And
you save no midweeks for the end of the season. No problem.
Yeah. Rest your guys then. It just, it feels, and I guess, and the criticism I got was by making it sound like it's an avoidable problem. But to me, and I think we're maybe a little bit lucky because we have quality opponents in driving distance. But it, to me, feels like it is a fixable problem. Just schedule better games earlier in this, like schedule better games later in the season and worse games earlier in the year.
Yeah.
It feels like it shouldn't be that hard, but
like Florida State, they play three midweeks every year. They play one at home, one at home, and then one where they meet in the middle.
Yeah.
Ooh. Like we Kentucky could do that with Louisville. Like
we played Georgia Tech home and home. Like, but then also our non-con schedule, right? We had the tournament in Arlington. We brought Nebraska in. Like we also challenge ourselves there, and I feel like that's where a lot of teams are missing, is they don't have a lot of strength in their non-conference schedule on the weekends early in the year, and so because of that they're kind of lacking on some of these avenues. But anyway, we kind of went off on a tangent here. I know this is kind of down in the weeds for a lot of college baseball fans who are just here for the Auburn Tigers.
Yeah.
But this series, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, again, game times for this tonight, 7 p.m. But again, the senior day festivities at 6:30. Our guy's going to be out there, so make sure to go cheer for Sonny. Friday, 7 p.m., Saturday, 2 p.m., and then after that is when you guys, I think it's Sunday night, you guys will find out the draw for the SEC tournament, or will you know by the end of play
Saturday? Yeah, end of Saturday, yeah, for sure.
End of Saturday, I mean, you guys will know.
What it looks like to me is, because Texas is playing Missouri, go ahead and give them three. And Texas and Texas A&M both have that one short game. So that's a disadvantage to us, and they're both 16-9.
Yeah.
So who we're basically playing against is Alabama. If we just need to win one more game than them, because if we win the same amount of games as them,
they have a tiebreaker. Because
now, if Texas A&M, I mean, if Texas A&M goes in and loses the series of Mississippi State or loses all three, that changes up a little bit.
Yeah.
But if we just win one more than Alabama, we'll be ahead of them for sure. And that's battling for a double bye.
I was about to say for everybody who's listening, the top four teams. So the SEC tournament starts on Tuesday. The top four teams don't play until Thursday. So if Auburn
or Friday.
Oh yeah, I guess it is Friday. Yeah, it's two games on Thursday, two games on Friday. That's right. Yeah. So if Auburn finishes one game ahead of Alabama and they're in the top four, the number four seed would play at 8 p.m. Eastern on Thursday. The numbers two and three play on Friday.
Mm-hmm.
Game two, if Auburn's in that four seed spot, would be Saturday. And then the championship would be Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of what we're referring to when we talk about the double bye. Teams five through eight don't play until day two. So worst case scenario is Auburn's playing as the number five seed. They'd be playing like Wednesday afternoon in Hoover. Mm-hmm. I think the five seed has the 2 o'clock Eastern slot, assuming that everything goes on time because of rain, and it never does in Hoover.
Yeah. I think the lowest possible seed we could be is sixth,
which would be the late game on Wednesday.
Yes.
It starts at 9 p.m. Eastern.
Yes. Say we just win one game this weekend. I think the lowest possible that we could be is six. Because Mississippi State, us, and Alabama are all right there next to each other.
Which would be the worst case scenario, because that game's not going to get played Wednesday night. It's going to get played Thursday morning. We all know.
Thursday, 1 a.m. game. You just love it.
Yeah.
Well, that's the good thing about them only having two games on Thursday and Friday now.
Now they can have that. Yeah.
Yeah. You can. It's not like, oh, we're going to have to play five games today. So it's nice.
That's a nice adjustment that was made. Mm-hmm. I do wonder if maybe there's a better way to schedule these games in Hoover and have a second site and not be trying to play four games on the same field in the same day on Tuesday and Wednesday. Maybe have one or two of the games at an alternate site. So that way you can overlap a little bit and you're not starting the last game at 10 o'clock at night or something. So it makes for a long day at the yard, but
go to Regions, right?
You could always do that. I mean, just coordinate with minor league baseball. Make sure they're
right venue.
Yeah, you would know. You would know.
Yeah, right.
How many home runs have you hit there? Do you know?
Just one.
Just one. But you got one. You got one.
Got one.
That's what matters. That'll do it for the Barn Baseball Show. We will be back early next week to talk about the SEC tournament draw, where Auburn will be. Please make sure you sign up at thebarnauburn.com. For Sonny DeShera, I'm Lindsey Crosby. This has been the Barn Baseball Show.